Hey, this is Danny G, and I'm here today at the Rose Garden with someone very near and dear to my heart. On today's episode of our little leadership talk, Lessons I Learned in Leadership, I have with me my friend, whom I call my essential friend forever. What's your name, girl?
My name, Jamila. No, I'm Jamila.
Hi, Jamila. Thank you for coming and sitting with me today on the Rose Garden on Talk That Danny G. But most importantly, thank you for coming to share your experience. Today, we're going to talk about something that we all say, like colloquially and casually, we all say, you know, follow your dreams. But what is the true cost of following your dreams? Like in real life, what does it mean for a person to really follow their dreams? And so I've been fortunate enough in my relationship with Jamila and our friendship over the last 4 years to have a VIP view of what it looks like to see somebody follow their dreams. So thank you for coming in today.
Oh, thank you for having me. So excited to be here and to share my little leadership talk because the cost of following my dreams was very expensive, and I'm willing to detail it with you today.
So, all right, in real life, Jamila and I met 4 years ago at work, and we were not co-workers. We were just two people who happened to work from the same space.
Mm-hmm. The same space, so on completely different team, different organizations completely, but we happened to share the same space. And that space was very isolating for us as individuals. And in our space, we were the only people who looked like us.
Yeah, I saw what happened. I was in a leadership position at a smaller organization that was housed within a larger org. And so it was pretty lonely. It was just me and the other member of my team, since we were a satellite location of a larger organization. So it was a really small team. So I was the only Black person that I knew there. All I knew was me. And so I saw Jamila in the room. Again, we weren't co-workers. We were just in the same space. And I saw her and I was like, yeah, we need to be friends.
Yes. You were like, I don't even know. I don't remember how you approached me, but it was like really important to me that I was really excited and genuinely wanted to connect with you. Cause I'm like, we are the only people here. And like, there was no big, strong connection with other coworkers. And it wasn't even that type of environment that would support all these deep relationships. So I felt like I was isolated and alone. And I wanted a friend. So I was really excited about connecting with you.
And to me, and so from that working in that same space, we became friends. We both left those separate organizations to go work together at another org. And throughout our relationship, as we've worked together, we've met other Black women and have just built a really strong network of women around us. Cause it's like, yeah, I've never viewed any of them as my competition, mm-mm, ever. Mm-mm. And we have overlapping skill sets, which is why we collaborate well. But she's done pieces of my job. I've done components of her work. But we never viewed each other as competition, mm-mm, because it was already lonely enough.
It was lonely enough. And I think my first introduction to like sisterhood in the workplace was for to have another Black woman look out for me and support me and help like share things with me and give me advice. Like that was my first introduction to sisterhood in the workplace. So that's all I've ever known was like, I sought somebody out who could help me and she helped me like there was no hesitation. It was like, come on girl, like, and let's go ride out. And you can shadow me for 2 whole days. Had only said hi and bye to this lady, but mm-hmm, that was my first introduction. Mm-hmm. And because of that introduction, she actually happens to be a shared mentor. Mm-hmm. Because of that introduction, all of my interactions with Black women in the workplace is the same generosity that she gave me.
Yeah.
Yes. And so it is truly hashtag Black Girl Magic when you can connect with Black women in the workplace who lift you up, mm-hmm. and who do light your, who shine a light on you and allow you to shine brighter and connect with other like-minded Black women. And from that joint mentor, we've met lots of other friends that we kick it with, like that we are really, really, again, across networks, we all we got, mm-hmm. Black women. So that's how we met in the workplace. What kind of work were you doing? So what was life? Because we are here today talking about how you followed your dream.
Yeah.
What does that mean? How did you follow your dream?
It was accidental. Or not accidental. It took a long time to reawaken the dream. And I didn't realize that that's what was happening when it happened. So back. In my childhood, I had a very particular dream that I wanted to pursue. And if anybody ever asked, for years, I said that, went to college for that. But there was someone, I think probably around the time I was 18 or 19 years old, that was when people started introducing sort of rational, safe, reasonable things, because at that point, when you're a child and you get the freedom of dreaming whatever you want to be, you can be a ballerina and a fireman and a president, and you can do all those things. But as you become an adult, as you become closer to being an adult, people want to make sure that you're making the best decisions, and that they have, you know, so they influence you to do what's safe, to do what's reasonable, in their mind for you. This is what makes sense based off of their experiences. So I was influenced into pursuing something that was safer, something that would, you know, get me a degree, you know, tired of paying these expensive ass bills, like get here, get out and get a job, mm-hmm. so you can help pay these loans back.
Go to school. Take out the money to go to school. Hurry up. Get out of school so you can get some money to pay the loans back.
Yep.
And that is the logic that somehow we were supposed to believe made sense.
Yep. That's what you have to do, right? That's the path to middle class. It's like you gotta get out here and go to school, regardless of how much debt you got to accumulate in order to be able to do it. But the path to middle class was go to college. College wasn't an option. So you went, and you got to get out in time because, again, these loans ain't cheap.
Right.
So
safety. And yes. it's out of a pure heart. Somebody pure heart. Said,
and concern for their pocketbook.
Okay, but wait. So so whoever coached you away from this dream, what was this dream? Did you want to be like a gymnast, what did you want to do that was so crazy and radical that they had to talk you down off of the follow your dreams ledge? Like, what was it?
I don't know that it was so crazy and radical. I just know that it would have taken probably 6 years as opposed to the 4 years mm-hmm. that most undergrad degrees can take.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just the thought that I agreed to 4 years at this rate. Sorry to out you, daddy, but you agreed to 4 years at this rate.
Yeah.
I don't really want to hear about a fifth and a sixth year.
So college, when debt enters the equation, college is no longer for some about exploration and self exploration, all that good stuff. It's about the quickest path to what we believe is going to result in middle class.
It's a means to an end.
So the ideas of go to college, figure out who you are, explore. No, go to college.
Within the parameters. Like, yeah, explore all you want to until you need to hit the stage 4 years later in May.
So you had 4 years and you couldn't go and figure it out. You had 4 years to make it out with this paperwork, to get back on the side, to start paying the money that you paid to get the paperwork,
mm-hmm.
and that your family had to pay to make sure you got the paperwork.
Yes.
So two levels of pressure to make sure you finish this.
Yes.
So you finished your degree.
I got out in 4 years, finished a degree, and moved on. Finished and did the work that made the most sense. Like, so not what I was passionate about, not what I was... You know, I just took a subject that I was good at, mm-hmm. relatively good at, that fit the 4-year framework.
You just picked a degree.
I picked it based on what I was decent at. Yeah. Like, if I can't have what I'm passionate about, let me just do what I'm decent at and move on.
Because that's the goal. Your goal is for me to finish in 4 years. I'm going to make sure I finish in 4 years.
Okay, yeah. Cool.
So, yeah. Did that, sort of decided on some career options that were like, well, if I can't do what I originally said I want to do, then I think I might want to do this. Or I think I might want to do that. And I kind of let, because we graduated during a recession, I kind of let the opportunities lead. Because
yes, because we graduated during a recession, you had to let the opportunities lead. Because
it was hard to get a job. So it's like, you grateful you get a job and you somehow make your why fit that.
Yep.
Or you find your narrative or your story that makes this the thing that you're doing and why you're good at it and why you want to keep doing it. Because
why this drives you.
Right. That's what they want in the workplace. So I eventually ended up in a space where I was doing just that. I was making it fit this made up why, because that's what made the most sense. That's what was paying the bills. That's what was allowing me to grow in a career, take on leadership positions. So I just followed it, kept it going. And I did care about it. And I ultimately began to care about it too much to be able to do it haphazardly or to do it in a way that I'm distracted, knowing that this other dream was being awakened inside of me. So when I met you.
Mm-hmm. So this was 4 years ago. So this is 2015. Oh my yep. God, it's 2019. Oh, so 2015.
And I'm in this place where, you know, I finally felt like I had a big girl job. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like it was actually like a livable salary.
Yeah.
You know, with some little benefits and stuff and a 401k. Like it felt like my first real big girl job. And I felt
it all paid off.
Yeah.
Like this is why you did it. The 4 years. It was for this.
Now I got a little something to kick back to my dad about these student loans. So I'm doing fine there, but I'm a little isolated and this experience is very overwhelming. Enter Danielle.
Hey.
And Danielle, she brought an association and a collaborative spirit that I hadn't experienced before. And because she had this collaborative spirit and because of the introduction she made and the community that she has built, you know, I felt empowered to not do things the safe and traditional route. And I felt empowered to actually build my own because I can collaborate with people, because I can do it, because I am smart enough, because I do have talent. And Danielle's a huge cheerleader and she will cheer you on. And so there are things that I picked up along the way where like this girl who was just finding her footing with her big girl job has now graduated to the point where she's willing to risk it all for her dream.
So how did you, so you got this big girl job and life is good. You moving through the world. You went to college. You listened. You took the advice. You took the safe route because although you wanted to do something else, people were concerned, you know, Jamila, we worked hard for you to go here. You're not going to mess this up. You got 4 years. You did your four. Like it's like, oh, you did your 4 years. A lot can change in 4 years because it's been 4 years since this moment. So mm-hmm. You did your 4 years of college. Now you're in the workplace. You have some experiences. You lived in a different city. You come back to Chicago. And I will say people who lived in a different place have a different relationship with Chicago. Mm-hmm. Like people who come home seem to love it a lot more. Like Chicago can do no wrong to people who came back home mm-hmm. to Chicago.
Yeah. Because, I mean, there's a difference. There's a... When it's all you've ever known, it's like, man, I can't wait to get away. I want to experience something different. And you experience it. And when you experience it and you come back home, you experience it differently. Because now it's not, there's another reference point to which you're experiencing it. So like, if I hated the traffic there, maybe this traffic is not even as bad as what's the face? Like the food or whatever it is, the people. Chicago, like compared to the East Coast where I used to live, Chicago people are different. Like mm-hmm. it's all about status on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. As soon as they ask you what you do, they trying to calculate what salary you must make. And they want to know who you're associated with, because that's going to determine whether they want to continue having this conversation with you. Like, it's like that.
So that's East Coast. That's some, yeah, it's different. Mm-hmm. It's different.
It's, the culture is different.
It's different.
Because everything is about business at that point. Like, yeah. What I experienced was, like, people wanted to know who you were and what you had so they can know, one, whether they want to hang out with you or your group, or whether you can do something for them, or y'all connection could be mutually beneficial.
Yeah.
Here, oh, we went to Kenwood.
Yes. And like, in Chicago, you bond over high schools and sides of the city.
And sports.
And whether you from the city or you say you from the city, but you really from the suburbs, and we find out when we ask you your zip code.
Right.
That's so not a game you want to play.
That we associate with people is different. The way that we build connection and community is different.
It is different.
So there was a strong, I loved being back here, but I also, what I'm getting to is that growing my professional career was a little bit easier here
mm-hmm.
than it was there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was connected when I was there, I was connected to really high power people, like mm-hmm. or high status people.
Mm-hmm.
But
what was your best experience from DC? So since we're talking about career journeys and following your dreams, you were in DC doing very different work than you were doing when you were in Chicago. Because again, I think for millennials, those of us who graduated in a recession, we will have different jobs throughout our lives. Like the days that Generation X and boomers do not understand, we don't get that 30-year guarantee. Mm-hmm. We don't get that came here 18 years old and I get to ride this thing out. Like, we don't have that luxury.
Yes, we don't. We do not. And we also have, well, I guess what the benefit of that is that we have all these different experiences.
Yes, we do.
You have all these different experiences that you find a way to weave them together.
Yes.
I always talk about I have to pull the different threads out, because if you look at all the titles that I've held over the past 10 years, they can all vary very greatly.
Yep.
But there's a thread there.
Yep.
There's a thread. And we always have to identify the thread and pull the thread through.
And that thread, if you identify the commonalities, might be something that taps into your natural gift,
mm-hmm.
which might help fuel your dream.
Because
mm-hmm. that might have been the underlying thing that kept you sane in all of these experiences as we're navigating doing work that feels like, is this my calling? Is it not my calling? Am I doing this for the mission? Am I doing it for the money? Do I feel fulfilled? Am I at peace? Like, all of these questions, but it is that little thread. But right, what were you doing in DC?
So in DC, I worked for a PR agency, and one of our clients was launching a national monument. And we were responsible for all of the media and events that went along with launching and unveiling a national monument. So we're talking about like nationwide coverage. We're talking about TV cameras everywhere. We're talking about different news stations, different radio stations all here for the unveiling. We're talking about the president being there. We're talking about Stevie Wonder, Aretha Franklin. Like, we're talking about all those type of people.
Heavy hitters.
And so to have the access that I had was incredible.
I was very young.
And there was another agency that was working with us. And so the other agency was a big, big firm. And there were people that worked there that were the same age as me. And so they're connecting with me and they're like, oh, yeah, I'm here doing the tickets. And oh, yeah, I'm here doing this. And oh, yeah, I'm doing that. And I'm like, oh, well, I have the staff and I'm not a namer, but this legendary A-list award winning whomever, like, I'm over here staffing her while y'all giving out the tickets. So the access that I had was just like, it's only because we were such a small agency and because mm-hmm. they trusted me that I was able to do that.
Yep. College, right? College will give you sometimes opportunities and access. And sometimes we just need that exposure. But either way, because for many of us to have work security or concessions or tickets or check-in is enough
mm-hmm.
to be in that space and breathe that oxygen, especially at a young age. I'm just happy that I'm so lucky I get to.
Mm-hmm.
No, not when you have the skills and the ability to be able to staff and plan and host.
Mm-hmm. like planned a major event for, I think it was like up to 1,000 kids. Like my little 22, 24, maybe I was 24, 24 year old self is doing this, mm-hmm. right? So things shift and change. I end up back in Chicago and I'm trying to find a way back into this career.
What career?
Back into PR.
Okay.
But in a new market.
Okay.
And Chicago is very hard to break into. And so someone was like, well, I have a position that's kind of like PR, kind of like sales, kind of like marketing, kind of like that. And they were talking about a recruitment position.
Okay.
And people were like, you know, if you can be a recruiter, you could be anything because you can talk your way.
You can be a recruiter. Like, you can be anything,
right? Like you can make your way into PR because it's directly related, and you get a transferable title and you're good. Like work your way up. You can do it, blah, blah, blah. So I'm sold on this position, and it happened to be for a worthy cause, right? Education. So here, I'm here now.
Now we get to mission work.
I'm adapting my why.
Yep.
Because I'm doing this great work for the greater good.
Yeah.
But again, I meet women who introduce me to sisterhood in the workplace that only enhances my life.
Yep.
For the most part, I would say majority of the time working with Black women in the workplace has been wonderful. It has been great. It has been a really like good collaborative bond and comfort and all those things that you, and advice, like all those things that you want. I would say the majority of my experience has been like that.
Yeah.
And so I have been building and building and building, and there's been all of these experiences over the last 4 years that led to me leaving my full-time job to pursue my dream. And it seemed like it was sudden. Like one day, you know, I'm announcing my resignation, and it seemed like, wait, huh?
We thought you were happy. This was sweet. This was good. Right. Like, you're doing great work.
What happened?
Yeah.
And I'm like, there have been, when I look back over the last 4 years, there have been so many things that helped prepare me for this.
Mm-hmm.
There, and then it went into hyperdrive. And one of the reasons why I think it went into hyperdrive is because I wrote it down.
Ooh. Wrote that vision.
I wrote it down. I wrote down
vision.
That what I wanted, and I got a career coach to help me and support me because I said I want to do something different. I know where I am now doesn't fit with
how
what
did you
my
know that
is
though?
To
so
do.
Like, okay, so we go to work, we feel what we feel, we come home. That's very different than, you know what, I'm not satisfied or I'm not happy. Like, how did you get to the point where you realize that there was a disconnect between what you really felt like you should have been doing and what you currently were doing? Because the lines get blurred.
Mm-hmm.
Your why moved.
Mm-hmm.
When you get into mission work, you fall
you
in love with
it.
That mission.
Yeah.
Right. You fall in love with the mission. One, and then two, you got to shift it. Your why has to constantly move.
Mm-hmm.
Always. So like, how did you realize, like, wait a minute, in addition, I'm not living my dream, and
mm-hmm. I'm not living my dream, and this is mad uncomfortable.
Yeah,
like it got to the point where it was more uncomfortable to not be pursuing my dream than I was comfortable just in my little safety net. Like it was, I was so uncomfortable, and I don't do well with being uncomfortable. That is one thing about me. If I'm uncomfortable physically, if I'm uncomfortable, I'm going to the doctor. I'm going to see somebody. I'm going to go talk to somebody and get some expert advice on why I feel discomfort. If I mentally, if I'm going through some things in my heart and not feeling well, I'm going to a therapist and I'm going to talk about why I'm uncomfortable and figure it out and fix it. Like I'm that person. So when I felt uncomfortable professionally, and there were so many events that led up to it, some seemingly innocuous. There were so many events that led up to feeling uncomfortable. But it got to the point where it was very, very painful to not be pursuing my purpose. Even as scary as it was, the thing down in my heart that I wanted somebody to help pull out of me and help guide me to it was I needed that more than I needed to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the biggest thing for me. What was like, okay, I got to do something. And I've been stretched this whole year maybe even more than a year, that I know that there were things that I had to do to grow myself mm-hmm. that I know now, like, I get it why now. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe a year and a half ago, I started feeling this feeling about, like, I need to step outside of myself socially.
Yeah,
I'm a strong introvert. I love being at home. I would love I love cancel plans where I get yes. to say, like, I'm cool mm-hmm. with that. And I'm cool with, like, missing group gatherings and then catching up on the side because that's more comfortable for me.
Seeing the pictures on social media.
Right. And loving and liking them.
Yeah.
Like, yes. I'm yes. so sorry I missed it.
Yes, look great.
We should do lunch to catch up. Like, that was my thing. I love, like, because that lunch and individual conversation is so much more comfortable for me than group stuff. Mm-hmm. But I started being pushed, like, you have to go to these group things. You have to. So I started doing that.
So when you say uncomfortable, you mean, like, in your spirit. Mm-hmm. It's not just about, like, oh, work got on my nerves, or, mm-hmm. oh, I'm drained. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, there's something deeper. Mm-hmm. Something is disturbed.
Yes.
Like, I had peace. One day I woke up, and that peace is not here. Mm-hmm. And it's nothing that I can do to change or modify my current circumstances to make my peace come back.
Yes.
Like, my peace is gone from this. Mm-hmm. And so how did you realize what took your peace? Like, how did you know it was work? How did you know it wasn't life? Like, how did you know that it was, because you were doing great work. You have had relationships with students across the city of Chicago with the type of work that you've done. You've helped kids see colleges, have exposure to experiences they would not have had. Like, we've done it for the baby girls when we recruited for a girl school in the city. You helped recruit for a lot of different kids. Mm-hmm. So it's not that you were doing work that wasn't meaningful. Mm-mm.
It just didn't mean the right things to me. And it didn't. I started to feel like there is somebody who feels stronger about this than
yeah.
me. Who is able to feel strong because this is their true passion, not because this is something that they think is a worthwhile cause and they're willing to do it. And it's cool. Like, it's meaningful work. It's cool. But that's not my, like, I started to feel like somebody who felt completely and utterly passionate about this.
Yes.
Could do it better.
Yes.
And could be of more benefit than I can.
So then what about, okay. So then that's the mission fit, the work again. Since I've known you, I've seen you have to stretch and become super creative and perform in times that you have been terrified. Like, outside of it now, like, we can say it, but I remember you had to do an annual event. You had 4 months to pull off an annual event at an org that you were brand new to. You had just gotten there, 3 months earlier. Mm-hmm. Then for one job, and then they were like, hey,
actually,
great, you're here. I want you to do this other job. Right. You have 4 months to do it.
Figure it out, girl.
Figure it out. That has been like your career.
That has been.
But you did it.
I did it. And I it feels weird to say, but I did it successfully.
You did it successfully.
Well. Like, I made it happen. That is, like, I became very comfortable making someone else's vision come to life. And I think one of the, like, there was a job that I did where, like, the most valuable thing that she ever did to me or did for me was that she validated the things that I did, where particularly two really strong points that have developed over my career, where, like, so I executed something and was like, you did that shit. Like, you did it. Don't, like, you did this. Take it in. Like, you did it. Her allowing me to do that and giving me that space and encouraging me, like, that what I produced actually, like, was good and beneficial and, like, nobody can take it away from you. There's some confidence that I developed over time where it's like, okay, this is what I'm capable of. This is what I can do. This is what I bring to the table. And knowing that I can successfully bring someone else's vision to life lets me know that I can successfully bring my own vision to life.
Say that one more time, please. Please.
Because I have been able to bring someone else's vision to life.
Come on.
I know that I can bring my own vision to life. Because with their vision, I didn't have all the details.
Nope.
They had whatever they had and they gave me whatever they gave me. And I was able to successfully bring someone else's vision to life.
Yep.
I know I have the complete vision. And I have the same faith, the same level of faith. Those people have become my theys. I had a mentor say, like, find your theys. Where they can do it, you know that you can.
Yeah.
Like, and if you could do it for them, you know that you can. Yeah. Like, finding those ways, finding those targets and those things to look at to be like, I can do this. I can do it.
So you had wins. You had experiences. You had connections with the work. You had opportunities to shine in the work. You still realize, like, you know what? This is not my purpose. This is not my calling. You mentioned having a career coach. So when you got to the point where you realized this is not it, what did you do? Like, what was your next step when you woke up one day and the piece that should have been there was gone? What did you do?
I knew that the piece was regarding my career.
Yep.
And I didn't know how to get the piece back. But I also didn't know where to go from where I was. Like, I had no idea. I just knew that where I was at that moment did not fit me. And I'm like, okay, but I don't know what it looks like to have something that does.
Yeah.
I don't know if this means that I want some passion projects. I don't know if this means that, you know, I'm going to get some second stream and I'm going to build it to the point that it becomes the first stream. Like, I had no idea what it was going to look like. And so I get with this career coach and he was like, this is great. I'm so excited to work for you.
Wait, how did you get with a career coach?
I found one. Oh,
you found a career coach.
Yeah, I found one. I found a career coach because I was like, I looked for places that would give me guidance, right? Like, I turned to my job and I'm like, what can I do for some, like, professional development, some leadership coaching, some this and that? Like, how can I improve my performance? I turned to my job. And then it became clear to me that I needed to find an external coach who could help me. So,
I think that brings up a fascinating point for us, especially as women, especially as Black women. We have to own our own leadership development. Mm-hmm. Like, you cannot rely on your job to develop you. And that sounds terrible. Like, if you are fortunate in a position and in a place that they have structured professional development programming designed for you, that is great. But if not, you will just be figuring things out for your entire career. And you will wake up one day, like, I just figured all this out. Mm-hmm. And that's great. But, like, do you really know? You know what you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know what you know. And so how did you even know that a career coach was a thing? So I've heard of, like, a therapist.
Mm-hmm.
So when I took myself to therapy for my 31st birthday, I took myself to therapy because I wanted to make sure I was communicating with my CEO better.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was important for me to make sure that I could speak. I was speaking clearly so that I wouldn't be misunderstood by leadership.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know what it's like to go to therapy to talk about work.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean about career coaching? Yes, I have a career coach. Well, mm-hmm. I've had one, but I want to know how you got to one in this journey.
So one of the things that I knew was that there were people in leadership who had some type of executive coaching or some career coaching or some life coaching. I knew that was a thing, right? And I feel privileged enough that there's a certain amount of privilege that comes along with knowing that that's a thing.
Yes.
That's a thing. Because that's usually in people's hidden arsenal.
Yes.
Where they show this improvement or they have this language that they learn from their coach or that they get from their sessions with their coach. They don't necessarily announce that.
No.
So you're looking at them and you're looking at the result of having received coach, but you don't necessarily know that. You're looking at them and you take it as face value. So that was something that I knew. I had access enough to know that there were people in positions of power who had coaches or advisors or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, I can get me one of those. I can make a little piece of change, like how much they cost, how much they run. So I went to and got a referral from a friend for her coach and decided, like, that's what I was going to do. Yeah, that's what I was going to do. But I also found other ways to sort of edify myself. There was this high up executive, Fortune 500 company, whatever, like super high up. And she had these, like, leadership development sessions. It costs, But it was worth it because she poured into us in ways like in ways of a like your high power auntie. Like that is how she poured into us. And it wasn't just about professional stuff. It was about your relationships. It was about, you know, your fashion and your home and cleaning and outsourcing, like all those things that you would want to hear from an auntie who has what you have. She has all your answers. You looking at her like you can clearly identify. She got all your answers. If you're talking about a relationship, if you're talking about being an executive, you're talking about starting your own business and having your own brand and building it from the ground up, she has all of those things.
And those people do exist. Like when you say find your theys, so you find if they can do it, I can do it. But you can also find your yous. Mm-hmm. Like if you did it, how did you do it? Because there are people who are willing to share how they did it.
Yeah. And those people, and even she's someone, I wouldn't be surprised if she had some type of executive coaching or something that helped her.
Yeah.
Because it's important. So I get with this coach and he's like, Jamila, this is all about you. This is all about what you want. I need you to really sit down and think of three things that you want to do. And I'm going to support you in getting there. So my little scary self, I did three things. And they're ultimately what I want to do, but what I wanted to do was so hidden in those three things. I was very like vague and very safe. And I'm like, oh, my passion projects, and I'm this creative person, but I don't have the space to explore my creativity. And oh, I'm this, and I want to do this. Like it was very like shrouded in mystery because I was so afraid that I couldn't even like call a thing a thing.
So you wrote around it, talked about it, all of those things. Didn't call it.
Wouldn't call a thing a thing until he called me out about it one day.
It's great when you have people who hold you accountable. Yes. Real life accountable.
And he called me out about it because he was like, so I'm hearing the goals and what you want. And I'm hearing what you're describing that you say is going to get you there. And it's incongruent. Like, it does not go together. So it sounds like your passion projects is a business. Like, that's what it sounds like.
Why were you calling it a passion project in the first place?
Because it's my passion. And I wanted it to be a project.
That's cute.
It is cute. It's like, that's more comfortable to say than I own a business.
Yeah, it is.
I had to learn. Like, I'm still not all the way comfortable saying I own a business, but I do.
Oh, are we skipping pieces of the story? Are we skipping around? Okay, so you got this coach. You got an executive coach. He called you out.
He calls me out, and things start just rolling from there because I had to accept that what I'm calling a passion project is really a business that I want to build. And it's really the place that I want to be most creative and where I can let my creativity flourish.
Are you a creative person?
Yes, I am. And it took me, you know, 30 years of my life to be able to even say that I am or to acknowledge that I am. Doesn't matter how many paintings I have and how many self-portraits that I've drawn and doodles that I have done on whiteboards in random schools. It doesn't matter. Like, you can see creativity in what I do, but I've just now started to be able to call it that.
Why? To own it. What made you or who made you feel that creativity was a bad thing or something that could not be celebrated and cultivated? Like, why did you feel you had to hide it, and which now takes us all this time till you get to wake up one day and realize that your joy has been robbed because you are not being able to walk in your full creative purpose? Because that's what this all got down to.
Yeah, and creativity isn't that safe.
It's not that safe. It's but not that's that your safe. Thread. Remember you said like the thread, the one piece? So all of your experiences have gotten you to this moment where now you wake up and your career coach is like, passion project, ha.
Girl, this is a business.
This is a business.
Then went to see Michelle Obama after that, where she echoed all the things that he said.
Shout out to our homegirl,
Ariel. For the tickets.
Yes.
So she's reiterating these things. And then you know, that discomfort that I had, that where I had to be more social, I had to be out there more, I had to be meeting different people. I built a relationship with someone whose whole job is to help women start businesses.
Would you look at that?
So 2 days after I had this conversation with him, I'm setting up time to go meet with her, not knowing that that is her whole job.
Well,
I was meeting with her because I had happened to be out at a luncheon because, of course, I had to do more social things because I felt that pressure and that calling to do so. Meet her 2 days later. She's like, oh, yeah, I work at this center where all we do is help women start businesses. Weeks later, like, State of Illinois is emailing me because they've approved my business.
What?
And that, like... the risk that I had to take, or like jumping out of all these different things, like to sort of wrap it up, like the dream costed me my security blanket, right? Like in the words, in the eyes of some people, I just had a sweet job. Like all I had to do was come to my little sweet job and do my little work, get paid my little money and go home. Like you got it good, girl. But I didn't. It wasn't good for me. And it wasn't giving me the peace and the joy and the freedom and the emotional space and the mental calisthenics that supported what I needed, like to grow, like
mental calisthenics. Come on.
So it cost me my security blanket, and it also like it costed me. I had to grow into blind trust and blind faith in God, right? Because I have what I have from my little sweet job, and I have, you know, a support system, and I have all these things. But I don't know how I have the next few steps, but there's a lot of how that I just do not know.
Blind faith.
And I don't need to know, because I didn't know why I was being called and being pushed to be more social and build this network. I had no idea.
Were you comfortable while you were being called and being pushed to build that?
Hell no.
So then you felt this pressure, this discomfort at work, this career discomfort. Then you feel called to do this other stuff that you do not want to do.
I do not
like this.
I like my home. I like my alone time. I like small groups. I like one-on-one meetings. I like coffee. I like, you know, breakfast tea. Or something. Tea, pancakes. Like, I like those type of things.
Just pancakes. Shout out to our home girl, Julianne.
But you wanted me to navigate all these different spaces. I didn't want to do that. But it was that very thing that helped propel me and helped give me a space to start in some next steps. And so I'm confident that as I keep following, I'll get more next steps. And I think that like there's a extra level of tenacity that it cost me. Because when I was making somebody else's vision come to life, like I was going to get paid regardless, right? Like there were other people around. I could turn to the side and be like, hey, I got to ask you a question, or hey, I need some help, or ooh, the team, can you help me with this? Or like there were other ways to troubleshoot and escalate a problem to other people. When I have an issue or I have some paperwork that I don't quite understand, or I have to do something and I'm not like that is very new for me, I don't have anybody else. Like I escalate to myself. I'm all I got. So I got to find some answers. I better find somebody to call, to talk about, get these answers, because I don't have it. This is all new to me.
Yeah.
But what I am realizing is that I have some of these things naturally innate inside of me. Some of the things that I've learned that I will have to do in this business are things that I was naturally going to do,
yeah,
or things that I naturally have done in my preliminary launch of what I'm doing. So to have that type of confirmation kind of lets me know that all of this will be worth it, because I have the confirmation that I'm following the right path, that I have, if everybody else has the right and the choice to pursue their dreams, then I do too.
You do too.
I do too. And I'm going to.
And you are.
Okay.
All right.
I can't do that. I can't roll my eyes like that. But you know, y'all know what I meant.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for coming in and sharing. I mean, you are a real life unicorn. You really did put yourself and you bet on yourself. You bet on your dreams and on your ability. You bet on every experience that you've had up until this point. You know that you were built for this moment because the doors have opened in ways that let you know, even though you can't see much further, you still have a path. Every single step you take, God is right there. You got everything you need every single step of the way. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just excited to see what happens this year and beyond. Thank you for listening on this little leadership talk and lessons that I learned in leadership with Jamila as she came in and answered the question, what is the true cost of following your dreams? And so I wish her the best of luck as she follows her dreams. And to everybody else who feels that they are alone and following their dreams, don't feel alone. You got to build your network and build your team. Like, no man is an island. Even Jesus had a team. Like, you have to find the right people. You have to also choose to follow your light and follow your yeses. And not surround yourself with yes men, because that's not a good thing. But you have to chase your yeses. When you are chasing your dream, and Jamila, you didn't even speak to this part, but when you're chasing your dream, it is something that is so different than what people thought you should be doing mm-hmm. or than what you are currently doing. People can't help, whether it be for good reasons or for nefarious reasons, they can't help to come up with a but. Mm-hmm. And there are times where a pause and a hesitation and a stop, wait a minute, is necessary. But when you know it's your dream and you know that you have been prepared and you know that you have been called and you know that you have this discomfort in your spirit where you can't move, it's something your joy is affected. Mm-hmm. It's something when you go to sleep and everything is fine and you wake up and something is missing and you like, wait a minute, I know that there was something here. And so to chase that and to be brave enough to say like, God, look, I know it's you calling me. And then, of course, when you're walking in your calling, other things can feel really uncomfortable. So in addition to this discomfort, now I also have to do stuff I don't like doing. Mm-hmm. What? Mm-hmm. You know I don't like doing this stuff. But you have to, because all of that stuff plays together and it all comes together. And it's all going to lead to wherever this journey is going to take us.
Yes.
So I'm excited. Follow your dreams. Build your network. Follow the lights, chase your yeses, build your team with people who will be honest with you, hold you accountable, but still celebrate all of your wins. And for anybody else that is in the way, listen, okay? You either with me, you against me, or you in my way. I'm Danny G. The G is for Gucci Mane. That's from the Gucci Mane Essentials. It's one of his lyrics. I do enjoy Gucci. This is Danny G, and the G is for good night.